Nothing was damaged in the incidents. Officials in Miami say a terminal at Miami's airport has been evacuated. Authorities say a bomb-sniffing dog detected something while examining a pallet. You're listening to NPR. Japanese officials say at least 17 people died from a typhoon that brushed the Pacific coast today. Typhoon Wifa has not come ashore, but it triggered deadly mudslides and wrecked homes on an island about 75 miles south of Tokyo. Dozens of people are missing. Some areas say they received about 30 inches of rain over a 24-hour span. Workers at the damaged Fukushima nuclear plant north of Tokyo are taking precautions as the storm passes by. Polls have opened in New Jersey, where voters will pick the state's next U.S. senator, as NPR's Joel Rose reports.
Democrat Cory Booker is running on his record as mayor of Newark. Booker has better name recognition across the state and more than a million followers on Twitter, but he's facing a surprisingly vigorous challenge from Steve Lonegan, the former mayor of Bogota, New Jersey. The conservative businessman turned politician is trying to become the first Republican in 40 years to win a Senate election in New Jersey. The winner will serve out the 15 months remaining in the term of Democratic Senator Frank Lautenberg, who died in June. Joel Rose, NPR News. Sarah.
Pop duo Hall & Oates are among the musicians getting their first nominations to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. A few other first-timers include Linda Ronstadt, Peter Gabriel, Nirvana, and Yes. The inductees will be announced in December with a ceremony planned for next April in New York. A potential strike has again been averted, just for today, against the San Francisco area's mass transit system. Unionized workers and management for the BART system are working with a federal mediator. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the Melville Charitable Trust, supporting solutions to prevent and end homelessness. On the web at melvilletrust.org.
This is Ken with a WMNF community announcement. The Animal Coalition of Tampa, ACT, will host the 13th annual Stride for Strays 3K Dog Walk and Tailgate Party for Pets on Sunday, October 20th. All proceeds help ACT provide affordable health services for the pets of Hillsborough County. To register or learn more, you can visit strideforstrays.org. That's strideforstrays.org.
Support for WMNF comes from our members in the Clearwater Jazz Holiday, October 17th through the 21st. Among the headliners are Chicago on Thursday, An Evening with Paul Brown and Larry Carlton on Friday, Tower of Power on Saturday, and Brandi Carlile on Sunday. Information and tickets available at 727-461-5200.
Walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal, come hear the animal. Talking animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal, come hear the animals, talking animals, talking animals.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Dr. Milton Mills, the Associate Director of Preventative Medicine with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, PCRM, the co-author of PCRM's report on racial and ethnic bias in the U.S. dietary guidelines. Dr. Mills is an internist practicing at hospitals in Virginia and Washington, D.C. He maintains a longtime passion for preventative medicine, and a key tenet of his philosophy there is urging his patients and others to follow a plant-based diet. Dr. Mills will deliver a lecture at the Tampa Bay Veg Fest this Saturday at Okeechobee Fort Brooke Park in downtown Tampa. We may get a sneak preview of his lecture amidst our discussion when we speak with Dr. Mills presently. Later in today's show, we'll have a brief chat with Isabel Tosi, chief organizer of Tampa Bay Veg Fest, quickly exploring a festival, some of the elements offered, speakers, films, etc. We'll get to that in a moment. First, I'd like to take a moment now to thank everyone who donated recently during WMNF's Fall Fun Drive in support of Talking Animals. We not only made our towering fundraising goal, but exceeded it. False modesty prevents me from revealing just how far we traveled past the goal, but let's just say it was a comfortable distance. So thank you, one and all. And in fact, to my horror, I realized after last week's show that there was one group of folks I neglected to thank, some of those who pledged ahead of time on behalf of Talking Animals. They include Joan Zacharias of Tampa, Wendy and Mark Taylor of Tampa, Anonymous from Tampa, Bo Jackson from Lakeland, Nancy TG from Vista, California, Patricia Massari from Tampa, Danny Throat from Tampa, Richard Loopy from Safety Harbor, Anonymous from Tampa, and Shirley Brucaleri from Clearwater, Florida. So thank you all belatedly, but thank you nonetheless. All right, let's get to our discussion with Dr. Mills, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Dr. Milton Mills to Talking Animals. Good morning, Dr. Mills.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Happy to be here.
Great. So your devotion to preventative medicine truly does seem nearly lifelong. And in what may be an apocryphal tale, it's said that you brought up preventative medicine in your med school interview, which means this goes back at least as far back as you're being a college kid. So how far back does this really go?
Well, actually, it goes back to really my teenage years when I became a vegetarian. I became a vegetarian because I became for primarily both health and spiritual reasons. And the two were completely interconnected in that I became a Seventh-day Adventist when I was about 15. And the Seventh-day Adventist Church encourages its members to become vegetarian but doesn't require it. And like most other Westerners, I was very addicted to meat and could not initially imagine living without it, even though I sort of eliminated the what the Bible describes as unclean meat. But I still was eating chicken, beef, and fish, and so on. And I started reading, well, first of all, I read in Genesis where when God put Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, he told them to be vegetarians, and even after they messed up, he enlarged their diet to include the plants of the field, which one can think of as grains, legumes, and vegetables, which they previously hadn't eaten. And so I was, my response to that was, well, if this is healthier for me, why is it healthier for me? And I began reading everything I could on diet and health. And the more I read, the more I became convinced that, in fact, those who eat plant-based diets are healthier, have less disease, and live longer. But even that wasn't enough to kind of push me over the edge. It was when I was having some struggles in my relationship with God, and essentially he said to me, you know what, if you want a closer relationship with me, you need a clearer mind, and for that you need a better diet. You have to eliminate the animal foods from your diet. And so that's when I became a vegetarian, and out of that grew my interest in the relationship between nutrition and health. And, after having seen family members and family members of very close friends suffer with diet-related illness and even die prematurely from heart disease and other problems that could have been prevented, wanted to dedicate my life to helping people to understand that we don't have to live in fear that our hearts are going to rise up and attack us one day, or, constantly live in fear of developing some of the more common cancers if we would only change our diets to the diets that our bodies are designed to eat and that do, in fact, promote better health, greater longevity, and even better mental functioning. Less depression and other psychiatric issues that people are often dealing with.
Wow. Well, it's I came into this thinking this was mostly the product, I mean, the longstanding interest in preventive medicine was mostly the product of being kind of a, if you'll excuse the expression, kind of a science or chemistry nerd. But it sounds like it's actually much richer than that. And even, you know, while I thought you were sort of a precocious scientist guy, you were actually very precocious in other ways, it sounds like, as a teenager.
Yeah, I guess that's true. And but the science part of it definitely was a very integral part, because again, it's all interrelated. I mean, when you realize that in fact our bodies are designed to consume plant foods, and that's what helps us function the best and helps promote the best overall health. I mean, there are very clear science and or scientifically based reasons for that. And in fact, the reason that I decided ultimately to become a physician was a little different from what usually draws people into medicine. I mean, if you talk to a lot of doctors about why they want to be physicians, you often hear stories like, "Oh, I fell and broke my arm when I was a kid, and you know, this doctor kind of put my arm back together, and I, you know, felt so good about, you know, the way I was treated that I wanted to spend my life healing people," kind of thing. Well, for me, it was more that I wanted to have a really sophisticated understanding of the physiology behind how nutrition affects our health. And so I wanted to have a very detailed and intimate understanding of disease and how diet plays a role in that. And also I wanted to, I guess you could say, have the credentials to talk to people about changing their lifestyle for health reasons and not have them say to me, "Oh, you can't say that. You're not a doctor." And so it was kind of a twofold thing, both to get that background, but also so that people could know that they could trust what I was saying and telling them, and that they would take it as sound medical advice.
So part of it, going to med school, was to kind of shore up that credibility, it sounds like. But how did the sort of longstanding interest, and again, as we've established, kind of the rich interest in preventative medicine that mixed in with being a seven-day Adventist and vegetarian early on, I mean, how did that change and evolve over the course of the medical school training that you did receive?
Well, you know, it's interesting you should ask that, because what you mentioned that the experience I had when I was interviewing for medical school. So, when I went to medical school, I knew that I was definitely interested in the relationship between diet and chronic disease. And I was interviewing at a med school in Boston, and my interviewer asked me what I was interested in, and I went into my whole spiel about preventive medicine, and he listened carefully, and then he said to me, "Well, you don't want to end up like the dentist. They fluoridated the water, and now they have no patients."
And put themselves out of business, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, you know, I committed the ultimate faux pas on an interview. I looked horrified. And so he responded by trying to say, "Well, what I mean is, you know, in American medicine, we operate from the disease model. Mm-hmm. We are in the business of treating sick people. We don't really focus on trying to keep people from becoming sick." And, you know, again, since I was trying to get into the medical school, I didn't point out that was kind of ridiculous. And and asked, "Well, why aren't we doing that?" I just sort of nodded, and went on with it. But
yeah, you don't want to be an upstart before you even get accepted into the med school, right?
The point is to get in, then become the upstart.
That's right.
So when I did, you know, go to medical school, I would be frequently asked by some of my professors, "So, Milton, are you going to be a real doctor? Meaning, are you going to, you know, practice medicine the way everyone else practices it? And fortunately, I was a little older than the average student, and definitely much clearer on what I knew to be true, what I was committed to, and so I was, and by this point, I was absolutely sure of the validity and value of plant-based nutrition. So I wasn't swayed or intimidated by their ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was just kind of telling me, yeah, I'm going to be a real doctor, but I'm going to practice medicine in, you know, new ways and help, you know, try to blend the, you know, traditional allopathic approach to with bringing in diet and, you know, nutrition advice to help people make changes to really reduce their risk of disease and hopefully get off medicines. And I'm happy to say that I have been able to do that in my clinical practice with some great successes in terms of getting diabetic patients off their medicines you know, helping people to come off of blood pressure medicines. It's helping others with autoimmune diseases to change their diet and really bring those diseases under control and to essentially cause them to go into what is effectively remission.
Mm-hmm.
So there is no question that most of what we see in Western countries is directly related to the ways that we eat and live, and much of it could be prevented by simply changing the things that we eat.
Yeah. All right. Well, I want to get into that in definitely much more specifics in a moment. I just want to let folks know this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, my guest is Dr. Milton Mills, Associate Director of Preventative Medicine with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, PCRM. He'll be speaking Saturday at the Tampa Bay Veg Fest. If you'd like to ask Dr. Mills a question now or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So yeah, this is probably exactly the right moment, Dr. Mills, to just ask you to maybe outline sort of the key tenets of your philosophy of preventative medicine in the way that you've already sort of started to allude to in terms of, you know, reversing some conditions and effectively putting certain conditions into remission.
Sure. Well, it all stems from the fact that when you actually look, I have a lecture that I do that's entitled, Are Humans Designed to Eat Meat? And that's not the lecture I'm going to be doing at the Tampa Veg Fest, but if people are interested in that lecture, they can find a version of it on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
That I did for the Hawaii Vegetarian Society a few years ago. But essentially, it what it is a comparative anatomy discussion looking at mammalian carnivores and mammalian herbivores to elucidate those anatomic and physiologic features that are associated with eating animal foods versus those that are associated with eating plant foods. Because when you think about it, animal tissue and plant tissues are very different. And as a result, they require significantly different anatomic and physiologic equipment to both acquire the foods, process them, and digest them efficiently, and also to deal with the sort of toxin loads that are associated with each type of diet. And it turns out that, you know, plants tend to load their tissues with alkaloid compounds to try and discourage animals from and insects from eating them. And if you're going to eat these plant foods, you have to have the physiologic equipment to both process those compounds and detoxify them and get rid of them. And it turns out that our physiology has not only adjusted to being able to deal with those many of those compounds, but the act of eating them actually confers significant health benefits. So, for instance, when you look at plants in the cabbage family, like Brussels sprouts,
mm-hmm.
kale, and so forth, they have these sulfur compounds that were really designed to discourage insects from eating them, but that when we eat them, they actually boost our immune system and actually help the immune system associated with our digestive tract to be much more robust and much more complete. They also help reduce cancer risk and so on and so forth. And by contrast, when you look at animals that are designed to eat animal tissue, they have very different teeth, very different jaw structure. Mm-hmm. Their digestive tract is designed to handle large amounts of protein and fat without developing heart disease, and also to handle copious amounts of animal protein without having it damage their bones. When humans eat lots of animal tissue, the protein leaches calcium from our system. At least over a lifetime, it can significantly increase our risk for developing osteoporosis. It also increases our risk, as we know, for a number of different cancers, as well as heart disease. Turns out, no matter how much fat and cholesterol you feed carnivores like dogs and cats, they never, ever develop heart disease because they have the physiology to process all that fat and cholesterol without it damaging their blood vessels, but we can't. By contrast, you can't feed them certain compounds. Like, for instance, you should never feed your pets, like, onions and garlic and compounds from plants in that family, because it can cause them to hemolysis. It can cause their blood vessels to burst, in essence. Not blood vessels, but their blood cells, their red blood cells.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, veterinarians will tell you frequently that there are a number of medicines that we take routinely that we should never give to our pets because they don't have the physiologic equipment to process it. So there absolutely are very, very stark differences in how carnivores and herbivores are designed.
Sure.
And I could hear people out there saying, yeah, but we're omnivores. Well, we're omnivores only if you actually look at what we choose to eat. If you look at our anatomy and physiology, we clearly have the anatomy and physiology of a committed herbivore. There are certain animals like bears, raccoons, and animals in those families that are designed to be both to consume both animal and some plant foods, typically fruits and berries and softer foods like that. And you know, obviously we don't have time to go into detail on this, but they do have anatomical features that allow them to both procure and process both types of foods.
Mm-hmm.
Human beings don't. And so as a result, what happens over a lifetime is that when we eat foods that our bodies aren't designed to handle, it eventually creates disease. It leads to heart disease. It leads to diabetes. It significantly increases our risk for a number of autoimmune conditions like lupus, multiple sclerosis, rheumatoid arthritis, and other problems. And many of these problems, if they're caught early enough and you make significant changes in your diet and lifestyle, can be arrested and or reversed by converting to a plant-based diet.
So this brings me, maybe we can make this kind of a more specific and both hypothetical and specific at the same time. So let's say there's a hypothetical patient of yours, patient A, and since heart disease is obviously so common, so rampant, let's say he has heart disease. Maybe he's had some sort of, you know, cardiac incident. Maybe he's had a bypass surgery. I mean, it's our hypothetical patient. We can give him whatever history we like, I guess.
Sure.
But so leaving aside meds just for the moment, for the purpose of this discussion, what sort of recommendations would you make regarding lifestyle changes and obviously specifically diet for patient A? I mean,
sure.
It sounds like right off the bat, there'd be much more in the cabbage family, but maybe more just what you're sitting next to your bedside with patient A and say, wow, man, we gotta make some changes. Here's some of the key ones I recommend.
Well, that's an excellent question because let's talk about patient A. Patient A is your typical 52-year-old Westerner who chows down on cheeseburgers and ribs and the whole nine yards. And one day he's out mowing his lawn, and all of a sudden he gets this crushing chest pain in his chest. He's short of breath. He starts sweating profusely. And he calls his wife and says, you know what, I think I better lay down And his wife, having good sense, says, no, you're having a heart attack. I'm calling 911. And I just give that scenario because men are stupid. And we often think that we can just sort of walk it off. And it's because most of us are married that many more of us don't die because women have the presence of mind to actually, you know, do something appropriate. But anyway, he takes him to the hospital, and he's found to have a blocked artery that supplies one of his coronary arteries, the arteries that supply blood to the heart, is blocked, meaning he is having a heart attack. Well, clearly, for that person at that point, changing his diet is not going to save his life. What he needs is to go down to the cath lab, have them, you know, thread a catheter through that blocked artery, put in a little metal device called a stent, which is a little metal tube that will open up, smush that cholesterol and garbage against the wall of the artery to restore blood flow to the damaged heart muscle, and hopefully prevent him from having death of his cardiac muscle. So fine.
Mm-hmm.
So at that point, the chest pain clears up. He's feeling better. He's like, "Woo, doc, I feel so much better. You saved my life." That's true. If patient A goes out and resumes his typical lifestyle that he was living before he came in and got his stent, he's going to end up having another heart attack because that stent does nothing to interfere with the disease process, which is the damage to the blood vessels, the deposition of fat, cholesterol, and calcium in the cardiac arteries that ultimately lead to blockages. And it may be that the next time he has one, he might not make it into the hospital and he may just drop dead. So what I tell that patient is, okay, we have dealt with, you know, the acute problem, but now we need to deal with the disease itself. And to do that, you have to convert to a diet that reduces the amount of inflammation in your body, that reduces the tendency of these blockages to form in your arteries. And that means you need to eliminate animal fats. Ideally, you should significantly reduce and or eliminate animal protein and convert to a high-fiber, plant-based diet, because not only will that lower your the amount of cholesterol circulating in your blood, it will also significantly reduce the amount of inflammation and inflammatory markers in your body. Furthermore, a plant-based diet is not only high in fiber, but assuming you're eating a varied diet that is, you know, contains a lot of fruits, vegetables, and so forth, you're going to be consuming a number of phytochemicals and antioxidants, which help reduce inflammation and actually exert a protective effect on your blood vessels and help them operate more efficiently and make them less likely to form these blockages, and will actually help your body clear the blockages that have already formed. Because there have been several studies done by a number of doctors, notably Dr. Dean Ornish in San Francisco, Dr. Caldwell Elphiston, that have shown that by putting patients on vegan, plant-based, low-fat diets, you can actually reverse blockages that have been demonstrated to be present in coronary arteries over time, so that those blockages actually disappear.
And
that's something that we have not achieved with medications or surgery.
Yeah, well, that to me is one of the, I would think, for patient A and the, you know, thousands or millions of patient A's out there, to me, that would be like the almost like the single biggest selling point.
Absolutely.
Which is like, hey, okay, yeah, you got to really alter your diet, but here's what's going to happen. You're not only going to get better, but the stuff that brought you in here and that your wife had to call 911 for, if you do this right, that's going to slowly disappear and reverse itself. I mean, that's almost like saying, hey, here's the coolest magic trick for your life that you'll ever anticipate.
Precisely. And what patients are not told is that all of the studies that have looked at coronary bypass operations and coronary stenting have shown that while these procedures do improve the quality of a patient's life, meaning that they will, you know, obviously they can interrupt a heart attack in process and progress, or they can reduce the amount and severity of anginal or chest pain symptoms that patients have. They actually don't increase overall, in the absence of lifestyle change, those procedures alone do not increase overall survival or reduce the likelihood of having another cardiac event. And that's because, as I said before, they have done nothing to actually interrupt the disease process, the underlying disease process.
Yeah.
They simply deal with the acute symptoms.
Again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Dr. Milton Mills, an internist affiliated with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. He'll be speaking Saturday at the Tampa Bay Veg Fest. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or comment for Dr. Mills, you can call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So, Dr. Mills, what do you think, given the sort of towering significance of this to again, all the patient aides out there, what's your view of the most effective ways to spread preach the gospel of plant-based diets? I mean, obviously, an interview like we're doing now, a lecture like you're doing Saturday, sure. Books, films, but I mean, do you feel like people are really, you know, getting the word out, or what other ways could be even more effective, do you think?
Well, certainly, there's no question that people are becoming more aware of the value and benefit of plant-based nutrition. There are a number of wonderful films that have been done that show the journeys of sick patients who've adopted plant-based nutrition and been healed by it. There's like Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. There's Forks Over Knives. Vegucated, and a number of other films are out there that actually show in real time what happens when these very sick people change their diet and how their disease processes essentially disappear.
Yeah.
And these people literally feel, you know, that they've been given a new lease on life. Unfortunately, there is first of all, there's just a lot of inertia in the medical system itself. It's set up to dispense drugs and do procedures on patients because that's how doctors get paid and that's what they're trained to do. And that's, you know, it's like the scorpion and the turtle, where scorpion promises the turtle, if you take me to the other side of the lake, I won't sting you. And halfway across, he stings him. He says, "Why'd you do that?" Says, "Because I'm a scorpion. That's what I do."
Right.
Well, doctors are trained to dispense drugs and do surgical procedures. We are unfortunately really not taught nutrition and sort of the preventive aspects of medicine in standard medical curriculum. If we want to learn it, we have to do it on our own. So I say that all that to say that it is unlikely that this impetus for change is going to come from the top down,
mm-hmm.
because there's just a lot of, as I said, sort of inertia to keep the system going. You know, pharmaceutical companies are making, you know, billions of dollars in selling drugs to people.
Yeah.
The most profitable drugs that are being marketed currently are statins,
sure.
And cardiac medicines. And so, you know, they don't really have an incentive to tell you to do something that's going to take money out of their pocket.
For sure.
But by the same token, this impetus for change is going to have to come from the bottom up, and that's exactly what is happening. We're seeing that there are, you know, these organizations around the country, like the vegetarian societies and other groups that are encouraging people to change their diet. They're putting the testimonials of people who've done this out, you know, on the web, as I said, in video documentaries and so forth, to help people understand that if you do make these changes, you will get benefit and be better off for doing it.
For sure.
And you know, what I frequently hear people say to me is, "Yeah, but doc, you know, I like, you know, chicken, or I like, you know, this, or I like that, and I can't live without," you know, fill in the blank.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I usually take that moment to to tell people, you know, you're just addicted. Because, you know, when everyone thinks about addiction, they always think of the alcoholic or the drug addict. But I tell you, the worst epidemic of addiction in this country is our addiction to unhealthy food.
For sure.
And then I also remind people is that, you know, when you were born and the doctor held you up and popped you on the bottom and you started to cry, you didn't ask for fried chicken. You didn't ask for a pork chop. You didn't ask for ice cream. Everything that people think they like, they had to learn to like. And because we were all born with our preferences, and just as we were taught to like unhealthy things and things that damage our health and damage the earth and create an environment for cruelty to other animals, we can learn to like foods that are, you know, healthy for us, help promote better health, that help us live longer, more functional lives, and that don't require that we damage the earth or abuse the earth or the creatures. So, you know, this is a matter of choice, and we can choose to make change. And once you learn to like things that are healthy, you will like them as much as you like those other things. And I'm speaking from experience because that's a journey that I've made.
Right.
You know, there was a time I thought I couldn't live without meat. Now I can't believe that there was a time that I actually put rotting, necrotic animal tissue in my body. It horrifies me.
Well, yeah, you know, Dr. Mills, I mean, you raised a bunch of great points. We've got so many people who want to speak to. We're sort of nearing the end of our time. And one thing about, like, not coming from the top down in terms of the drug companies, I mean, nobody's going to give up their Lipitor profits, right, obviously. But what do you think in terms of making inroads for this? How do high-profile figures kind of affect the situation? I'm thinking about, for example, President Clinton. You know, now I gather he eats a bit of fish once in a while, but otherwise he talks pretty openly and often about his plant-based diet.
Right, exactly,
and would seem to
right.
be sort of a powerhouse poster boy for the plant-based diet.
Absolutely. That, you know, the and there are a number of Hollywood stars and others who have converted to vegan and plant-based diets that I think can have a tremendous effect in both in terms of raising awareness, but also with encouraging people to make the change themselves. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, the more people we can get doing this, particularly high-profile people, the more helpful it will be.
All right, so Dr. Mills, if it's all right with you, we're going to take a few of these calls just because some of these people have been waiting patiently. I just don't want to run out of time before we get
sure.
to at least a couple
no
of
problem.
Them. Okay. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Milton Mills.
Hello.
Hi, it's you. Go ahead.
I wanted to point out that treating disease and inflammation with lifestyle and diet is really only half the equation. I was wondering if you guys are familiar with the work of Dr. Eric Topol over at the Scripps Clinic in reading the human genome, and they describe what today's medicine is called evidence-based medicine, and it's obsolete. It's the beginning of the end of the way we do medicine today. The future of medicine is biological-based evidence based on the problem with the human genome, which is the blueprint of your health. And stop eating meat isn't going to help you if you have a messed up genome.
Okay, thanks for your call. We'll let Dr. Mills respond to that and move on to our next caller.
Sure. The fact is that the human genome has not changed significantly over the last, several thousand years. And when you look at the rise of chronic diseases, they are directly related to change in diet and lifestyle. There are migration studies that have looked at, say, Japanese populations living in Japan where they eat a primarily plant-based diet that's low in fat, low in animal food, and they have very low rates of heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and so forth. They migrate over to Western countries, adopt a Western lifestyle, and their incidence of these diseases shoot up and actually often surpass those of the general population. Same thing with West Africans. You look at the incidence of heart disease and cancer in West African societies where traditional West African diets are plant-based diets, contain no dairy, contain small amounts of animal food, when they migrate to Western countries and adopt Western lifestyles, their incidence of colon cancer, heart disease, appendicitis, and so forth shoots up and again surpasses those of the populations where they're living. So these are clear instances where the genome has not changed. The only thing that has changed is the diet. The idea that somehow we're going to get some drug or some therapy aimed at our genome that's going to somehow prevent us from developing disease, I think is maybe ludicrous is not quite the right word, but it's just misplaced.
Okay.
There's such a clear relationship that it's really the diet. It's the diet, it's the diet, it's the diet.
Okay, cool. Let's take another call, at least for one more before we run out of time. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Dr. Milton Mills.
Dr. Len, I just wanted to say that I agree with what Dr. Mills says. I myself started 20 years ago injecting myself with 58 different types of venom, both neurotoxic and hemotoxic venom, and I take a limited number of supplements such as resveratrol, but primarily a plant-based diet with occasional fish, similar to what you said about President Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to see what Dr. Mills thinks about the recent Nobel Prize winning in 2009 about telomere lengthening as it relates to aging, as it relates to diet and a plant-based diet.
That's a great question. And for people who, kind of lay people who aren't familiar with what telomeres are, just kind of an easy way to think of them is that they're these lengths of nucleic acid at the end of our chromosomes, that the longer they are, the more resistant our bodies are to chronic disease and the longer we live. And in fact, every time a cell divides, the telomere length gets shorter and shorter, and when it gets to a certain point, the cell can no longer divide and it dies. And so telomere length definitely correlates with overall longevity. And studies have shown, some very recent good high-quality research has shown that plant-based diets actually promote the improved functioning of an enzyme called telomerase, which is responsible for helping to lengthen our telomeres and keep them in a healthy state. So again, plant-based diets will give you the longer telomeres. They will help preserve telomere length, and that definitely correlates with disease resistance and also greater longevity. And again, it's important to, when you're talking about length of life, to not only just talk about how long your life is, but how functional it is. Because if you're just laid up in bed, you know, riven with, you know, 50 different diseases and you can't move, you can't think, you can't function, who wants to live like that? But plant-based nutrition has been shown to correlate with less chronic disease, greater levels of function, of being more functional, being more active, having less arthritis, and all of these other chronic ailments that we deal with. So, again, it's the nutrition.
Okay, Dr. Lynn, thank you for your question. And Dr. Mills, I'm afraid we have reached the end of our time. We have other callers and we have emailers. I had more questions for you, so maybe we can find a time, hopefully not too far down the road, to ask you to join us again just to cover more.
I'd be happy to.
Okay, so again, we've been speaking with Dr. Milton Mills, Associate Director of Preventive Medicine with the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. He'll be speaking at VegFest this Saturday, Tampa Bay VegFest, I think at 1 p.m. And just quickly, you mentioned that your lecture was not going to be Are Humans Designed to Eat Meat? What is the title of this Saturday's lecture?
It is Putting Your Colon to Work for You. It's all about colon health.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the importance of fiber in our diet.
Great.
It's a great lecture.
Great. Well, we look forward.
And I also just want to remind people that they can find a version of that Are Humans Designed to Eat Meat lecture on YouTube.
Absolutely. In fact, I posted a clip, an excerpt, like a 8 to 10 minute excerpt of it last night on Facebook.
Oh, fantastic.
So, yeah, it looks good. All right, Dr. Mills, again, thank you so much for your time, and we look forward to seeing you on Saturday, and hopefully have you again on Talking Animals soon.
All right.
Thank you so
Take
much.
Care.
Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
All right. In just a few minutes, we'll speak with Isabel Tosi about the Tampa Bay Veg Fest taking place again this Saturday at Okeechobee Fort Brooke Park in downtown Tampa. By the way, WNF and Talking Animals will have a booth at Veg Fest, so hope you'll swing by and say hi. Right now, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. In a somewhat wry selection to follow the conversation with Dr. Mills and proceed our chat with Isabel Tosi, here's Jim Gaffigan with part of a piece called Eat Vegetarian on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I'm a vegetarian now. Anyone a vegetarian? Yeah, there you go. I'm not a strict vegetarian. I eat beef and pork. And chicken, but not fish, because that's disgusting. How can you tell when fish goes bad? It smells like fish either way. Well, this smells like a dumpster. Let's eat it. No one really likes fish. They just won't admit it. Like, I like fish just as long as it doesn't taste like fish. I got news for you. I don't think you like fish. I'm almost positive fish is supposed to taste like fish. Actually, you know what's really good on fish? Anything that kills the taste of fish. How about relish in a gallon of mayo? That'll do the job. What if we squeeze a lemon and wrap it in seaweed and cover it in soy sauce? He's anti-fish. And we're right next to Lake Michigan. I am amazed that we're still serving fish with the heads on there. Don't you always feel like that eye's looking at you? Like, hey, you don't mind if I watch while you eat my body, do you? Don't be distracted if a little tear comes out. You can just tell yourself it's butter. Oh, what if a fish was in the audience? That would be awkward for all of us. It could happen. Lake Michigan's right there, buddy. The fish would laugh, but on the inside it'd be crying. Sad.
All right. That was Jim Gaffigan with part of a piece called Eat Vegetarian, taken from his album Beyond the Pale. All right, she's the chief organizer of this Saturday's Tampa Bay Veg Fest. Let's welcome Isabel Tosi back to Talking Animals. Good morning, Isabel.
Good morning, Duncan.
Thanks so much for joining us once again on Talking Animals. So let's jump right in. We don't have a whole lot of time, but let's hit the basics first of all. Where, when? I think we've kind of hit a couple of those, but run us through the basic details first of all for Tampa Bay Veg Fest.
Okay, Tampa Bay Veg Fest is this Saturday, which is the 19th of October, from 10 in the morning until 5 p.m.
There we go.
And it's at Okeechobee Fort Brooke Park in downtown Tampa. That is behind the St. Pete. I'm sorry, now it's the Tampa Bay Times Forum. And it's between the Tampa Bay History Center and the Marriott Waterside Hotel, across from Harbor Island and on the Hillsborough River.
And it runs from 10 to 5?
Yes.
Yeah. And so let's hit some of the things that people could expect to find if they they wandered over to Okeechobee Fort Brooke Park on Saturday.
Oh, lots of stuff. First of all, there's lots of delicious food, plant-based food with our restaurant vendors. We'll have live music and entertainment. We have some food samples that our volunteers at Florida Voices for Animals will be preparing. The food samples will be at the east end of the park nearest the History Center. We have a great kids area, a children's area with lots of activities, crafts, coloring, games, and also the nationally known children's entertainer, Shanna Banana. She'll be there from...
Shanna Banana? Really?
Yes.
All right.
She'll be there for two performances, one at noon and one at 2 p.m., We have speakers, we have films.
All right, well, let's elaborate on at least a couple of those, because really, first of all, just because we just spoke with Dr. Mills, let's talk about the speakers that will be there. Obviously, Dr. Mills is one of them, but who are some of the other speakers that will be talking on Saturday?
We have our keynote speaker is Jane Velez Mitchell. She's an award-winning television journalist and author and animal rights activist. We also have Dr. Neil Bernard. He's president and founder of Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine, the same organization where Dr. Mills works at.
Mm-hmm.
We also have Ellen Jaffe Jones. She's local. She's also an Emmy award-winning journalist. She's an author. She'll be doing one of our cooking demonstrations. She's an award-winning athlete. We have Robert Cheek. He's a bodybuilder. George Eisman, who speaks about the ill effects on your health of dairy.
Mm-hmm.
So those are basically our speakers, and those will be in the Tampa Bay History Center.
Okay. And I'm proud to say I think virtually all but maybe one have been guests on Talk Animals, so that's cool. And then some great films, actually one or two of which Dr. Mills referred to sort of in our conversation, but why don't you tell us a little briefly about the films people could see at one point or another during the day.
Right. We have Veducated, which Dr. Mills did reference, and actually Dr. Mills has a
cameo. Is in, right?
Yes, yeah. He's in it briefly.
Yeah.
That's a very good film. It's funny, it's fun, it's informative, it's very well received. We actually showed it last year. People tend to generally love that film.
Yeah.
We also have Plan Eat, which has scenes of delicious plant-based food being prepared by chefs, by top chefs, and those are interspersed with scenes of doctors and scientists discussing the benefits to your health and the planet of a plant-based diet and how a meat-centric diet affects the planet adversely and also your health. And we have The Paw Project, which is a true David and Goliath story about veterinarian Dr. Jennifer Conrad and her successful efforts to ban declawing in several communities. I know she was on your program recently.
Mm-hmm.
And our fourth and final film is Bethany's Story, which is a true story of a young girl's serious health problems and how she cured herself with a raw plant-based diet. And also with that film, the producer of the film, Janet McGee, will have a booth all day at the event. And she's also going to show the film herself and be available for Q&A after the film. So that's a really great opportunity to ask her questions about the film and also the health benefits gained by this type of a diet.
Cool. Well, let me say that, yeah, we're sort of just about out of time, but along those lines of being able to ask the producer, Janet McKee, questions, you have a cool thing, too, that might hook in at least indirectly to what we're talking about with Dr. Mills, which is the Ask a Vegan thing at the Food Family thing. So basically, as I understand, you know, if someone said, hey, you know, the age of one, where do I get my protein, or how does this work? Someone's on hand there to answer any and all questions you might have if you're thinking about altering your diet in some way.
Right, that's true. Cool. We have a volunteer there.
Great. Okay, well, I'm afraid we are desperately out of time, in fact, over time. But why don't you just give us the website, Isabel, where people could find out more about some of these things we're mentioning and just the details if they didn't catch them the first time.
Okay. The website is TampaBayVegFest.org.
Cool. All right. So we'll see you out there Saturday, again, from 10 to 5 at Cote and Chobe Fort Brooke Park.
Yes.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Isabel. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Duncan.
All right. So I'm Duncan Strauss. In just a moment or two, we'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a copy of Rebecca Pulley's latest CD, Tra-La-La. As you probably know, Rebecca created our opening theme song, and Tra-La-La is a thoroughly fantastic album. So you'll have a chance to win a copy in just a moment or two here on Talking Animals. Right now, just in a very truncated version of animal news and announcements. So again, the weekend of 1,000 animal events, or at least many. Of course, VegFest, obviously, Saturday. But also this Saturday is Wolfstock from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Highlander Park in Dunedin. There'll be a dog contest, dog demos, pet adopt-a-thon, live music, food and drinks, etc. So you can go to Heidi's Legacy Wolfstock.info for information on that. Again, as we've covered a few times recently, including with Linda Hamilton, on Sunday, the 20th, it's Stride for Strays. That's the 3K dog walk, but a bunch of other events. It's this year happening at Raymond James Stadium from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. And again, music and dog events, dock diving, Halloween pet costume contest, much, much more. The strideforstrays.org or actampa.org for more information on that. Dogtoberfest. Also Sunday, October 20th from noon to 6 at the Shops at Wiregrass. Again, all kinds of cool stuff. Doggy costume contest, pet adoptions, entertainment, and much more. Dogtoberfesttampa.org for more information there. Last but not least this weekend, and maybe others I've not even been told about, the 3rd annual Fashion Feathers and Fur, Sunday, October 20th at 6 p.m., fashion show featuring adoptable dogs, live entertainment, hors d'oeuvres, silent and live auctions, and that's going to take place at Keel and Curly Winery, Plant City. Proceeds benefit Dogma Pet Rescue, Florida Pet, Parrot Rescue, Second Chance Boxer Rescue. For information and tickets, go to fashionfeathersandfur.com. I want to quickly mention, we'll get into it a little bit more next week, but on next Thursday, October 24th, CNN is broadcasting Blackfish, the amazing documentary about Tilikum and captive orcas, and of course, focusing on SeaWorld and so, anyways, great, great film. We'll talk more about that next, as I say. Okay, so, I'm Duncan Schatz. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. Time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WNF member to win. There'll be a prize, a copy of Rebecca Pulley's latest CD, The Great Tra-La-La, to the first person who calls in the correct title of this animal song to 813-239-9663. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals. All right, if you happen to know that one, you can call in. We'll take it off air, but we are racing against the clock here. So I'll be back next Wednesday with another edition of Talking Animals. All our info is at talkinganimals.net. Links to Facebook and Twitter, podcasts of all shows we've done over 10-plus years' time. We're closing out today's show with an animal song. This is Oysterhead with Rubberneck Lions on WMNF Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weekiwatchee, and beyond. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 9 a.m. on Talk Animals. Come out and see us at VegFest Saturday, WMNF booth, Talk Animals booth. We'll see you then, hopefully. All right, thanks. It's WMNF Tampa.